welcome to another episode of Book Club Appetizer, episode 9, in fact.
Oh.
We're your hosts, Abby
and Alana. We're two bookish gals from readitforward.com, bringing you the snackable podcast that's great for kicking off your book club meetings or enhancing your solo reading adventures.
If you, like us, enjoy reading and discussing books with friends while eating and drinking, then you've come to the right spot. We're talking about awesome books, pairing them with exclusive author interviews and on-site discussion questions that provide ample food for thought.
And because we like to eat actual food, we match each book with its own appetizer and cocktail recipe. So go to readitforward.com/podcast for our July picks, provided to us by our friends at Tastebook.
This month's book takes place in the summer, so this month's appetizer has a slight nod to the 4th of July. Red, white, and blue buffalo chicken bombs.
Mm.
These sinfully delicious chicken tenders are wrapped in bacon, topped with blue cheese, and then smothered in buffalo sauce.
And, cue the dad joke, they're totally the bomb. This month's cocktail is slushy white sangria. It's refreshing, boozy, just how we like it, Abby. And since it's made in the blender, it couldn't be easier to make.
It's very peachy.
Peachy keen. Oh my God, I am my dad.
So apart from our amazing witty banter, Alana and I are bringing you recaps of books we've recently read and loved.
Then, Abby brings the author into the studio for a quick reading and to answer our most burning questions. We feel we have to warn you. The podcast contains plot spoilers.
This month, we read Listen to Me by Hannah Pittard, which, like so many delicious novels like Fates and Furies and Among the 10,000 Things, focuses on the interior of a marriage. The conceit is relatively simple. Mark and Maggie and their dog Jerome leave Chicago to drive to Virginia to spend the summer on Mark's parents' farm. But in the first few pages, after they've gotten on the road late, hit rush hour traffic, and hear word of bad weather, you know the trip isn't going to go smoothly.
At the beginning of the novel, we learn that Maggie has recently been mugged at gunpoint in their neighborhood and just hasn't been able to recover and return to her usual self.
Yeah, I get that. That's traumatic.
Yeah, absolutely. Has it ever happened to you?
No.
Yeah, me either. So at this point, she's paranoid and irrational and spends all of her time reading about other tragedies on the internet.
It's so sad. She's like caught in this cycle, and she's definitely experiencing some post-traumatic stress about the incident. And her husband, Mark, used to be caring when he would come in and find her reading about crazy things on the internet. And now he's short-tempered, and he's basically wishing she'd go back to the person she was before the mugging. You know, the one who didn't, like, immediately run through every worst-case scenario you could possibly think of.
Yikes. No way to be. So they set off on the road. But we know, like that storm that's looming down the highway, that this trip is not going to be sunny. Maggie is, of course, thinking the storm is going to be the next Katrina, and they should stop and get a hotel room. Mark thinks she's being ridiculous and that they should press on. Stuff is definitely brewing between these two, as one would expect for a couple with alliterative names. Maggie and Mark. It's
that
a bad sign.
Never works out.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and if you've ever been in a passive-aggressive fight with someone, especially a partner or a spouse, you know that the most uncomfortable place to do it is in a car. There is nothing to do but either fight it out or sit in silence.
Yeah, it's quite a setting for a book.
Yeah.
And not exactly the dream road trip that maybe they had in mind. We mentioned earlier how intimately this book examines a marriage, and one of the things that Hannah Pittard does so well in her writing is use the consistent perspective of third-person omniscient narrator. So we know that every marriage has secrets, but the narrator knows the whole story, and in turn, we do too as readers.
Ooh, yes. Through the narrator, we are privy to Mark and Maggie's inner dialogue and the private thoughts that they keep even from each other. Like Maggie gets nervous when Mark watches her park the car, or after the mugging, Maggie can't get out of her plaid L.L. Bean bathrobe, which makes Mark feel like he's married to a loser who can't move on with her life.
Oof. And another thing that's so spectacular about this book is the language the author uses. Hannah writes using the most gorgeous and vivid descriptions. Like, one I loved is when the couple sees these giant wind turbines out the window, and Pitard says they look like gods, enormous, three-armed gods.
Totally.
You know, none of her prose is overwritten. It's all filled with these, you know, succinct and very powerful words. The language actually echoes these clipped, short, frustrated sentences that the couple continues to share back and forth.
Right. I felt that was like the literary equivalent of when you're in a fight and you're like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah. She's doing that in her writing. That's totally awesome. I totally agree.
And the pacing of this book is really spectacular. It's suspenseful. Like, I was flipping the pages. I mean, between Maggie's paranoia, the couple's bickering, the things that they leave unsaid between each other, and the disastrous weather that's acting like this perfect foreshadowing device, I could not even wait to see what was going to happen between these two.
Some serious stuff goes down. Yeah. And all at that creepy motel off the highway.
Yeah, like the Bates Motel looks like Disney World compared to this place. So we won't ruin it for you in case you haven't quite finished the book. But in examining the fears, both real and imagined, between Mark and Maggie, the book ends up making us as readers examine our own fears.
I know you're going to have lots to discuss about your own personal fears and paranoias. Mine is bugs. As well, I'm sure, the inner workings of your own relationships. But before you do, stay with us. Up next, author Hannah Pitard joins Abby for a serious dissection of her novel, Listen to Me.
Hi, this is Abby, and I'm here with author Hannah Pitard. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Hannah Pitard. If you're north of the Mason-Dixon line, it's Pitard. If you're south of the Mason-Dixon line, they say Pitard.
Pitard.
Let's say Pitard.
Hannah Pitard. So, Hannah, thanks for joining us here on Book Club Appetizer.
Thank you for having me.
Your latest book, this is your third novel. It's called Listen to Me, and this book really looks at the interior of a marriage. Your main characters, Mark and Maggie, are in their late 30s, early 40s, married with no children. So what do you think readers find so satisfying about reading about marriages?
Well, even if you aren't married yet, or if you have no intention of becoming married, I think everyone thinks about it at some point, and everyone has been in the room with a married couple. But what fascinates me about couples, any kind, young, old, whatever, is the shared language and the vocabulary, that secret vocabulary that couples pick up, sometimes quickly, sometimes over years. And that's what fascinated me about this book. I wanted to see if I could capture a secret language and take something really specific and in it hope that readers can find the universal, right? Like, see their own relationships in these two highly flawed but hopefully loving and lovable people.
And as the book opens, Maggie is still sort of reeling from this trauma that she's experienced. She was the victim of a violent mugging in an alley near where they live in Chicago. And afterwards, she carries a ton of fear and paranoia as a result. And it really irked me that her husband, Mark, is like, you should be getting over this by now. Like, did you have a reason for portraying him like that?
I heard a story once when I was living in Chicago, and I was never mugged, but I did have friends who were mugged. This was a story once or twice removed. Someone told me about a girl who used to give $1 every day to the same guy who lived on her block. And I had a couple guys who lived on my block who I saw every day. You know, you kind of get to know the people who live outside your stoop, or who you sit on your stoop and you give them your leftover pot bellies every single day. And I was really struck by this story because this girl who gave this dollar to the same guy every single day, a year and a half into their sort of, you know, whatever it is, it's not a relationship, but they're acquaintance, or they're acknowledging of each other as human beings, one night he said her name and she went over to him and he punched her in the face and he took her purse. And I was always sort of, I've been struck by that story for so long because that would be me. I am totally the person who trusts too quickly and wouldn't know that maybe tonight there's something different. Maybe tonight he's been drinking. I assume that once, you know, once I've said hello a few times and you've said hello back, things are, there's a sort of social contract that's in place.
Mutual understanding.
Yeah, and obviously Maggie had not seen this homeless person before or this person who mugs her, but we do find out early in the book that she has a sort of really over-romanticized sort of obsession with a particular homeless man on her block. That's also a very privileged obsession. And I think that's what allows her to not be aware of when something is wrong. And as a result, she gets mugged.
Yeah, right. Her guard was down.
Her guard was down. Yes. Because what could go wrong? Because she's a good person.
Right.
And bad things don't happen to good people.
Exactly. In fact, I think that's a line in the book. So this couple, they're headed, it's summertime, he's a professor, they're headed to his parents' house, so driving all the way from Chicago to Virginia. So as they head further and further sort of east into their road trip, the weather becomes more and more grim and foreboding. Is this meant to echo their fight, or is it foreshadowing your way of building suspense?
Well, I think like all good symbols, the storm first and foremost has to be a storm, right? First, it just needs to be a true storm that is coming at them. And once it is that, then secondarily, it can start to be a premonition of things to come. Then once I realized that it was about this relationship, I loved the idea of being able to use the storm to play off their moods. And at one point the storm even seems to, you know, to dissipate and it seems like it's going to clear up. And there are moments when this relationship sort of the couple is able to remember one another and find one another and reconnect, and then the storm comes back and the, you know, the bickering comes back. And so absolutely, the storm is, there's something there that is echoing what's happening in the car.
Yeah, there's definitely a storm happening in the car a little bit sometimes. But right, then there's a hand on the knee and that sort of
They love each other. They love each other.
Both members of this couple have thoughts that the other isn't privy to. Just so interesting to see what they are pondering that's not spoken. Do you think that's true of relationships in real life?
100%. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's not, that doesn't even have to be a couple. That can be siblings, that can be a mother and a daughter, that can be a professor and her teacher. And I think very rarely are people ever 100% present.
And then as a writer, was it so fun sort of writing those inner dialogues?
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
It was especially fun writing from Mark's point of view. I have always gravitated towards writing from the male perspective. And writing about Mark thinking, who is a professor, writing about Mark thinking about his former grad student was so much fun.
So talk to me about writing suspense. Is it easy to keep your reader flipping those pages, or is that a difficult thing to do?
So that's awesome. You flipped through the pages and had to keep reading. That's great. I have no idea. It's not something, when it works, and when it doesn't work, it really doesn't work. I had an agent once who is not my current agent who once told me, Hannah, two words, plot and momentum. Plot and momentum. The way that this novel operates, going back and forth from Maggie's perspective to Mark's perspective, I think that's certainly part of what adds to the momentum, or I hope it is. I always try to end a chapter with some hint of an unfinished thought or a naively optimistic thought that makes the reader, as they flip to the next page and they have to start Mark's point of view, their first thought is, but I wanted to keep reading Maggie's. And then they start Mark's, and Mark says something either so asinine or so interesting sometimes that they start reading him again, and that they get totally invested, so that they're by the time that they're at the end of that chapter, they've forgotten how much they liked where we left off with Maggie and how curious or worried we were about her, and then we are back with her. So I think I lucked out in the format that it added naturally to the momentum and to the sort of somersaulting, the fast sort of downward somersaulting that happens. I mean, they start off and they're already fighting.
Yeah, but it's definitely propulsive. Like,
good.
Like the tires on the asphalt. Like,
yeah.
You feel that.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, thanks, girl. Yeah. So it seems like your books are all tinged with a little bit of misfortune or tragedy. Why is that a plot device that you keep returning to?
That's so funny. I think of myself as a very happy, very funny person. Somehow, almost everything I write is tinged with some sort of cynicism or darkness. I think I absolutely am somebody who uses writing as a form of catharsis, and I think I get it on the page so that it can get out of my system. I think life is hard. I think it's not easy, but I think it's really special that we all get to be alive, and I'm just trying to tell the truth, right? It's what almost every fiction writer would say, and the truth is, I look around and life is really a thing hard for most of us, and I think all of that just adds up to wanting to capture in the truest way possible what I see in the lives around me, while also paying respect to something I'm really in awe of, which is simply being alive and on this planet.
So, would you do us a favor and do a reading from
yes.
Listen to Me?
Oh my goodness, yes. Who was that woman out there? And what was the possibility that he'd actually spend his life with her? His whole life? Think about it. What were the actual odds? There were statistics on these sorts of things. If he wanted, he could probably walk down the hall of sociology and get the exact and most up-to-date numbers on his chances of staying married. Mark's guess? The odds were against them. The odds probably said that they had another 4, maybe 5 years together, which was about how many years the dog had left. But then, if that were the case, if that's how he really felt, then why'd he marry her at all? And hadn't they survived the first 7? Okay, maybe not this most recent one, but the 6 before that and the 3 before marriage, hadn't they survived those years in style, with class? She hadn't cheated. Neither had he. He'd never even thought about it. Okay, sure, fine, yes. There was Elizabeth, his former research assistant. But they hadn't touched, not once. Plus, she dropped out of the program last spring. Academia, she told him, wasn't for her. And over the summer, she'd moved to California, so it's not as though they could have messed around, even if they wanted to. But fine. All things on the table, there had been some emails. And those didn't look good for anyone. Last fall, he'd gotten the first email from Elizabeth. If I called you devilishly handsome, would you mind? And if I told you that I think about you, what then? It was Elizabeth who'd first brought his attention to the group of online activists who call themselves Anonymous. She suggested it as the final chapter for his book. Not that he was anywhere close to being finished, but the chapters were outlined, and Elizabeth, he suspected rightly, had said his history would be incomplete if it failed to address the future of anonymity. He'd been too myopic in his research, focusing almost entirely on pretenses that led to death. Stonings, masked hangmen, firing squads, kill buttons on death row. He'd been looking down and back instead of up and out. It meant so much more research. It meant creating a new timeline and giving in to a delayed deadline. It meant delving into a world of materials that existed entirely online. The irony didn't elude him. His colleagues would chide him. The Luddite takes on the internet, they'd say when he caught wind. But Elizabeth was right. It wasn't just Anonymous. It was Occupy. It was crowdsourcing. There was anonymity and inclusiveness, a we instead of I that meant an end to ownership and the possibility of meaningful blame. Anyone was starting to feel very much like everyone. But Mark wasn't there yet, wasn't ready to draw the necessary conclusions or complete the larger argument. It was a process, one step at a time. The chapters needed to build on one another, and Elizabeth had taught him the importance of surprise, of the willingness to be surprised by what he found. It was essential that, while he might have a theory, a working theory, it not be set in stone until he was absolutely ready. She'd opened up a whole new approach. He'd have called her his muse if it wouldn't have sounded so outrageous.
Thanks for listening, readers. Check out the reader questions on our site, in addition to a link to the Spotify playlist we created to accompany Hannah's book. We think it's the perfect soundtrack to any summer road trip.
Yeah, just without the fighting and the bad weather, just some Neil Young, some Springsteen, and the Stones. And if you're a fan of Listen to Me and want to read more books like it, we've got your back. Look for our other recommendations on readitforward.com/podcast.
We're producing monthly episodes centered on fantastic books we think you should read with your book club. So when you need something new, come see what we've been devouring. Then take a minute and leave us a review on iTunes. We'd love to know what you think of our show, or what you've read recently with your book club, or what you'd like us to read next. Basically, we just want to hear from you.
And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, @ReadItForward, and tweet about books with us. Happy reading, and cheers!